Welcome to the world of the strange, the mystical, and the unknown. Jerry Pippin's Parazone.
Hi, this is Farah Hirdezer for Jerry Pippin Show. We are in a very mysterious Victorian house right now in New Jersey. And my guest is Daryl Mitson from Preternatural Research Society. Hi, Daryl. How are you?
Hi, Farah. How are you?
I know you very well, and I know almost everything about your work, but I would like you to tell us about your organization and your work.
All right. Well, the Preternatural Research Society was founded in May of 2003. And the group consists of some very serious, dedicated paranormal investigators who are trying to do some different things in the field of paranormal research.
What kind of things?
Well, we take a kind of middle ground approach. We do both metaphysical techniques as well as scientific techniques. So, as well as using equipment and looking for, you know, video and audio and EVPs, we also involve psychics and psychic circles and house cleansings, trying to reach the middle ground of using the best of both worlds, as it were.
How did you decide to start your own organization? What brings you to this field?
Well, I started about 5 years ago in another New Jersey group, and I joined just out of curiosity, I guess. The more time I spent around paranormal, though, the more I started really believing it and seeing some amazing things. With that particular group, I went on to run it, and I realized at that time that what I needed was not a public group, but I needed a smaller group of dedicated people who really could put in the time and the energy to work on certain cases and really try to push this field forward.
Can you tell me about your personal experiences? Did you ever had personal haunting experiences before you started your own group?
Very little phenomena that I've seen. I had lived in a house in Linden, New Jersey, probably about 5 or 6 years ago, and I had heard my name called out when nobody was home. We had a TV that would change the station a lot of times, or it would turn itself on or off, especially when we would joke about it in a room. We'd say, yeah, the TV always turned itself off, and then it would happen. And one time we had heard the doorknob shaking violently downstairs for a minute or 2 minutes, and I had snuck out the other door to see who was, you know, what I thought was breaking in the house, and ended up to be nobody there. And of course, by the time I got there, there had been silence at the doorknob. But I never really was convinced that those were ghosts. It was interesting experiences, definitely.
Are you a psychic too?
I don't call myself a psychic. When I had started all this, I had had some psychic readings, and people told me that I did have abilities. And I actually never believed them because I was always the one on investigations that never felt anything. As time has gone on, though, it went from just having a sense of uneasiness to actually being able to locate where spirits were in a house usually. Probably over the last 6 months or so, I've actually been able to feel energy lines in houses and also to start to pick up how people have died in certain areas. So something is developing. I don't know where it'll end up, but I don't consider myself a psychic like some of my other talented colleagues are.
Okay, you are an investigator in parapsychology. How do you describe a ghost? What is a ghost?
The term ghost is pretty broad. There's many types of entities out there. Sometimes all that a ghost is just an imprint of some type of emotional event that's stuck in time. And that's something that you're going to see time and time again, whether either you have psychic abilities or the area is so charged with the energy of what happened. That spirit isn't conscious. That spirit is wherever we go when we die. It's just more of kind of like watching a tape recording over and over again. We have, you know, other spirits that are conscious entities, and these are earthbound for one reason or another. Either they choose not to go on, they don't know that they're dead, or they still harbor anger or doubt within them, and they're tied to the location that they had died in. There's also free spirits, which are usually the grandmother you might have had or the uncle that's just coming to visit you or tell you that they are all right or check on the new grandchild. And these are spirits that are able to travel between our dimension and where it is that they go when they die. And then, of course, there's other type of things. There's negative entities and entities that never had been human before. And those, a lot of people consider nature spirits, like animism, which is one of the basic religions, the idea that stones and rivers and trees all have spirits imbibed within them.
Are you afraid of that kind of investigations, or do you feel a strange kind of pressure over you when you visit a haunted place? How do you protect yourself?
The regular haunted place
Are there irregular haunted places too?
Well, anything that's haunted I don't consider regular to begin with. But ghosts like that, they can't harm. They can frighten. And, you know, anybody can be frightened of anything. You know, we've been on cases where you hear a loud noise or something happens and you get jolted. But in terms of being scared, no, because I know those ghosts can't harm us. In terms of demonic and negative entities, however, I wasn't scared when I started because I didn't know enough. And now I kind of know that there is a definite danger. I've seen people get scratched, thrown across rooms. I had somebody get very sick and sent to the hospital, directly linked to a case. So in that case, protection comes from such things as psychic shieldings, smudgings, house cleansings, prayers, and asking the God that you believe in for protection.
So what about the possessions?
Possession, I believe, does occur. I do not think it's strictly a Roman Catholic devil idea of possession. People do get possessed. I believe that in some cases, these are people that are letting these entities in some way. In other cases, it's people that have been plagued by an entity, an evil entity they didn't ask for, but at some point their will has been broken down and they become possessed. At that point, I have never done an exorcism before, but I have cleansed people of spirits, evil spirits attached to them. There's different, depending on what your path is, if you want to follow Wiccan belief or Native American or Santerian belief of how to cleanse these spirits off the bodies, there are different ways. And of course, you can also find a holy man of that person's religion in order to help out and release this person from the hold.
What kind of a cleansing way you are using? What is your path?
I use a mixture of things. I definitely use Native American techniques. We smudge with different things such as white sage, sweetgrass, cedar. And I also, of late, have been using a lot of the Santerian methods. I think that they are very powerful ways of banishing evil. Ultimately, I don't think it's the particular path that one uses or the particular words or what one's using as much as it is the energy that's put into what we're doing. I believe that things like white sage do have a power and put here in nature for a reason, but it's really the power of the person behind it and the belief of them as well as the belief of the person who has the problem. If they believe these things will help and they pray devoutly and honestly, I believe that is what's creating the energy that's sending these negative things away.
You have a wonderful group. You have a wonderful organization. Can you tell me about the other members of your organization apart from you?
We have some wonderful members in our group. Yes. We have Jane Doherty is one of the psychics that is in my group right now. She just had a book come out called Awakening, the Psychic Gift. And she has been doing this for about 20 years now. She runs psychic circles. She calls them seances. And she's able to pick up spirits in a place and have them channel through her and release spirits that are earthbound. Absolutely amazing. I work with a lady named Susan who also does psychic circles and she does house cleansing. She's great on equipment. She had run her own group before and now she's working with me. I work with a lady named Vasiliki who also happens to be my girlfriend. And her specialty really is energy cleansings and cleansing people. As well as using the equipment and the research, she's great at, you know, aligning people's chakras and releasing negative energies that are on them. I work with a gentleman named Ken who is involved with the Historic Trust of New Jersey. And he's involved with all sorts of historic homes and lands and research. And he's wonderful for getting us all types of information on any land that we've been with. A lady named Noelle, who also has a lot of sensitive intuitive abilities, picks up all sorts of stuff whenever she's in a house. I have another gentleman that works for me who's police officer of Union County, and he's been doing this for a long, long time, police stuff as well as ghost hunting. Great for investigative research, interviews, that type of thing. I have a lady that works at one of the major state universities, and she's also great with the research and looking things up and helping us as well as, you know, being a cool, calm, collected mind on the investigations and really pointing out things that otherwise we might have missed.
You are living in an antique, historical Victorian house. What happened in this place? Are there any hauntings?
This house, it's a little bit strange. I've had, obviously, in the field that I work in, I've had a lot of psychics over the house, and I had one who used to tell me all the time that the house wasn't haunted, but at different times, they said that they saw an older and a younger woman both kind of smiling and laughing, watching me in the house. But yet they claim the house wasn't haunted. It was just this presence that I guess came and went. I've had a few other people mention an area in my kitchen and also by the stained glass windows in my house that these are areas I should kind of look out for. And that there might or might not be something there. They're not sure. And we did do a seance at the house once, one of the psychic circles, and people that had lived here before were brought up, but they weren't haunting the place, just their memories were here. In terms of any weird activity, though, it's all stemmed from cases that I've had. I have had spirits actually follow me back to my house, and there's other times when I'm working on something, and I'll definitely feel something in the house, or, you know, the doors will slam, or they shouldn't. I don't think it's a ghost haunting. I just really think it's a spirit that just kind of, they pass through at times, whether I've encountered them on a case, or they just happen to be attracted to what goes on in this house. I'm not sure, though.
You have been investigating many cases. Which one was your favorite one?
Favorite or, you know, scariest? There's
both.
I mean, favorite, it's hard to say because I've met some really wonderful families while I've been doing this. There was a lady in Louise who I met in Watchung, and I've been back to her house many, many times. And her whole family is just wonderful. And I always enjoy going there. Something exciting always happens. And it's a great, you know, great feeling when I'm there. And that goes for a lot of the places I've been at. The ones that have might have had the most impact are the ones that are the most ominous. I had one where I had three female researchers all scratched at the same exact time on their back. The scratches all were the same size and same location on their back. They welted up and disappeared in a matter of minutes. And then later on the ride home, one of the same researchers was scratched again, woke up screaming, and her back had the scratches and it disappeared. And I guess that's the one thing that really showed me that there is not only paranormal activity, but there is evil out there. And of course, the other case, like I mentioned, where I had somebody end up in the hospital, that was the first case I was really scared on, because we did not know what was going to happen. There was a lot of demonic activity going on there, and a partial possession going on of a young child. And these things really made me realize that...
You mean the Lodi case?
Yes, the Lodi case.
Yes, I was there.
Yes, that was where the child was becoming possessed. And it did make me realize at that point that the paranormal investigators out there need to be more than just, you know, flashlight and camera carrying people that are going almost like they're on a safari to look for evidence and not there to help people. We need to research, we need to do experiments, we need to find out what's true and false in this field, and we need most of all to be able to help and counsel these families and do something for them.
I was with you in that house, in that case, in Lodi, and I remember every sensation very well. So, as we talked later, they were, the spirits or the entities were very interested in the little child. And this is very common in some parapsychological cases. Why do they prefer to possess the little children?
Well, a child is still between the other world and this world. They're born, a child's maybe 3 or 4 years old, they still remember what life was like on the other side. They're very much still connected to that. Children that are young as well are able to see things. Their imaginary friends are not always imaginary. They have this ability, and therefore they're open to it. Psychology has also shown that a child up until around the age of 4, give or take, cannot differentiate between the waking state and the sleeping state, which means that all those crazy dreams that your listeners might have had last night, a child would think that that really happened to them. So they're kind of caught in this really surreal world. That at one hand, they're operating under the laws of nature and physics, and then at night, they're operating in this amazing world where anything goes. And it leaves them open, vulnerable. They don't have anyone to turn to. They still don't understand the world. They don't understand their bodies. They don't know what's happening. They're very ripe for the picking, unfortunately, and entities can definitely come to them and find their way in. And unfortunately, it's also a great way to scare the whole family, because this is this innocent child who you will give your life up to defend. And when you're not able to defend them at this point, it does drive that stake in the family and really rip a family apart, which is their ultimate goal, is to cause that discord.
I know that you have been helping too many people who had problems with that kind of psychological paranormal entities or cases, and you don't charge any fees from the people that you are helping. But let's say that somebody has a problem at home and they need help. How they are going to find you? How they are going to reach you?
Well, the easiest way that people reach me is through our website, which is www.preternatural.org. And also, to make it easier for people, we also own the domain prsnj.org. And that's how most people find me, whether it be just through the search engine or through a link on another site. And, of course, I have a lot of people word of mouth. A lot of people know that I do this. And word gets out to me that someone needs help. And I'm also connected to a lot of groups in New Jersey, since we are one of the few groups in New Jersey, if not the country, that specialize in negative and demonic cases. I've discussed this with other groups, and when they reach a case of this type of thing, or something involving a cult especially, they will hand it off to me or consult with me, since we do have that as our specialty.
He also gives speeches, conferences, as far as I know.
Yes, I've done lectures at Drew University, Seton Hall University, and at Rutgers University. And basically, wherever somebody will call me up and ask me to do something, I'm always happy to give my time, give lecture. And we've appeared in different TV shows and magazines and newspapers and news clips. And we try to get the word out there as much as possible.
Personally, do you have any book projects for the future about your own experiences?
I've toyed with the idea of a book so far, but I'm still waiting until I really reach the point where I feel that my book will be different than the ones on the market now, since a lot of people can self-publish nowadays. I'm not exactly happy with all the books that are out there. Anything from the content to actually an abundance of grammatical errors I'm finding in these books. And I'm waiting until the experiments and research that I'm doing on the side is complete, where I have something new to offer people, more than just case stories or the same old, you know, what is an orb, what is an EVP. I will have a book out hopefully within the next year or two, but it's going to definitely be something different and a little more academic than a lot of what's out there now.
And there are lots of orb pictures, photographs, or ghost pictures all around on the web, or people, the beliefs that they take real pictures. Is there any way to understand which one is fake, which one is real?
I am sure that a lot of the listeners right now and the groups listening to this will hate what I'm going to say, but I do not believe that orbs are paranormal activity. In terms of differentiating between, I've seen a lot of groups that will admit that, yes, it's dust, it's camera artifacts, but there's such a thing as a ghost orb and a dust orb. Well, I believe in the theory of Occam's razor, which is when there are different answers for something, the simplest one is the one we go with. And if an orb that you say is a ghost can be reproduced in nature accidentally and look nearly identical, if not identical, then there's no reason to think that some of them are ghosts and some of them are not. And the research I've done with infrared video cameras and 35mm cameras and digital cameras has really shown that it is something that's natural. And we're actually now in the process of working on an experiment that has a data bank of about 5,000 photographs. And we're trying to show once and for all that orbs really are nothing but camera artifacts and dust. And I don't think it's something that people should rebel against or hate the fact that I'm coming out with this. I think that, you know, if this field is going to go forward, we need to find out where we're making mistakes. And every field starts out with, you know, physics, biology, chemistry, all came ahead very ridiculous, if you look at it now, hypotheses. And we have to get rid of those in order to find the truth. And that's hopefully what our group will help this field with.
Thank you very much for this wonderful conversation, for this wonderful interview. And before we finish, do you have any messages, any message to the Jerry Pippin Show listeners?
I just want to tell everybody that experiences that you have are valid. A lot of people don't believe the paranormal, but there are a lot of people like myself out there that do believe. And for those that consider themselves aspiring ghost hunters or amateur ghost hunters, the best thing to do is to learn. Read books, look at websites, find mentors, whether online or in person, to talk to, and really spend the time learning your craft before you want to go out there and do this, because when you show up at someone's house, you're really representing the whole field. And I really want to make sure that everyone out there that's doing this really takes the time to learn all the different aspects of it, as well as just the psychological counseling aspect of dealing with the family before they go out and try to mess with this stuff, especially with the negative cases.
I totally agree with you, Daryl, and thank you very much again. It's always a pleasure sharing experiences with you. Thank you.
Thank you too, Farah.